careful.
I'm dying with this one. What's new in digital media and journalism? Our new media newsroom team is ready for action. This week, the Go Media News.
Can the Chinese government control the news about the coronavirus?
But when mobile phones and social media keep news and rumors flowing.
Online harassment is a big problem for journalists, especially female journalists.
What are newsrooms doing to stop the common trolls and social media slander?
What's the latest on wearable tech? Are you looking for a new accessory to Accenture outfit?
How about a bracelet that will protect your privacy? It's called the Bracelet of Silence.
What is IGTV? Do you watch IGTV?
Did you know that Instagram has a TV channel? Why does it so need a TV channel anyways?
Does your phone ever stop interrupting?
How can you take control of all those annoying notifications?
From the IP desk, can YouTube stop the war between rights holders and content creators?
How can YouTube know who owns what? How does YouTube's content ID system work?
Was China behind the 2017 Equifax hack?
The U.S. government says yes. The Chinese military says no. What could Equifax have done to prevent this massive financial data breach?
All this and more coming up on OWWR, Old West Berkeley, web radio streaming live from the State University of Oklahoma College of Old West.
The big news this week is about the spread of the coronavirus in China and around the world. The coronavirus disease is now called COVID-19. Are we facing a global epidemic? The Wall Street Journal reports that globally, more than 82,000 people have been infected and that 2,800 people have died. The New York Times reports that the virus has now been detected in 47 countries. The Chinese government's attempt to quarantine and slow the epidemic have kept people isolated and shuttered much of the economy. What part do the media play in informing and sometimes misinforming the public about this serious crisis? Is the Chinese population getting the news they need from the state-run media? China is controlling the news about the epidemic using its strict system of state media censorship. The state censorship of the news media in China has led to a lot of confusion and fear about the virus. The Chinese government has been trying to limit the spread of rumors and misinformation online. But how effective can state censorship be in a nation full of mobile phones, chat apps, and social media? Jalen Natera is here to give us an update about the role that mobile phone users and social media plays in this massive public health crisis in China. Jalen, tell us a bit about how the government of China is trying to control the news about COVID-19.
Thank you, Lucas. So, there's a lot of controversy within the Chinese government on how they're actually handling the COVID-19 virus, also known as the coronavirus. So, there have been a lot of citizens who are angry with the government because the government is censoring what the media, what the citizens in Wuhan want the public to see. The government is actually doing their job in terms of sanitizing and cleaning, in terms of trying to get rid of the virus. However, those attempts have been ineffective, and they are not providing answers to the citizens of Wuhan.
What exactly is the coronavirus?
So the coronavirus, also known as COVID-19, is the latest pandemic as it makes its way across the world. The way the virus got its name is actually pretty interesting, as the virus resembles a crown, hence its name, Corona. According to the World Health Organization, coronaviruses are a large family of viruses that cause illnesses ranging from common cold to more severe respiratory diseases. So as you heard, it's very difficult to detect the coronavirus as it has the same symptoms as a common cold or flu. Common signs of the infection include respiratory symptoms, fever, cough, shortage of breath, and breathing difficulties. In more severe cases, infections can cause pneumonia, severe acute respiratory syndrome, kidney failure, and even death, said the World Health Organization. Since this outbreak is fairly recent, there was no preparation for this virus. Researchers and scientists are struggling to create a vaccine that will cast the virus. This virus originated from Wuhan, China, according to the World Health Organization. Coronaviruses are supersonic, meaning that they are transmitted between animals and people. Sources have said that this virus could have potentially been transmitted by the consumption of bats and snakes, while other sources say that the pangolins transmitted the disease by their scales, bruising, and stone for Asian remedies by the consumption of their meat.
How are the citizens in China reacting to this virus?
So anger is what has overcome citizens of China, as they aren't receiving any answers from their government. They have been issued by the government to remain calm, but the citizens of China and China are not doing that. According to the New York Times, some people are invading centers. They have criticized officials for failing to contain the initial outbreak in Wuhan, for limiting residents to private facilities in the region, and for not visiting these affected areas. These are just reasons to why the residents of Wuhan are angry with their current government. They are constantly seeking answers. Since they are already seeing anything, they are taking it upon themselves to self-control. So, in a minute, you're going to actually hear a clip on somebody who is actually quarantining Wuhan currently, and he is actually a U.S. citizen, and he just kind of gives a brief synopsis of how life in Wuhan actually is. So after hearing that, these are just kind of examples of what the government in Wuhan is doing to kind of quarantine this virus. So supermarkets are running out of food. People who are having these symptoms of the coronavirus are being rejected and being brought back to the places over where they're living because of how serious the pandemic is. So it's definitely hard for the citizens in Wuhan as they are being quarantined and there's nothing being done to actually provide assistance to them.
How is social media related to this issue going on in China?
So citizens of Wuhan, China are taking it upon themselves to report about the virus on these social media platforms. They are reporting on social media in an effort to inform the public how the government isn't being able. According to the New York Times, residents are using social media networks and messaging platforms to offer on-the-ground accounts of the live crisis that are difficult to find elsewhere. Citizens in Wuhan are sharing the raw material of what's really happening. These personal experiences are primary sources of just how the situation is really being handled. According to the New York Times, users have shared experiences of being in lines at hospitals for hours, shuttling sick loved ones from hospitals to hospitals, only to be sent home without even being tested for the virus. Although citizens of Wuhan, China are trying to inform the public, some of this information they put out are false. And you are going to hear another clip about how severe this coronavirus is and how the citizens are actively trying to kind of show their experiences on social media. However, how the government is taking initiative to censor these real live material videos of these Chinese citizens. So there's a lot of videos and information posted on social media that the citizens of Wuhan, China want to inform and educate the public on. There was recently a video of a woman and her apartment was quarantined and she was recorded screaming help, can someone please help me? That video was online for about one day and the next day it was off. So the government is actively taking charge and censoring these real videos that the Wuhan citizens want to inform and educate the public on what the government is doing.
False rumors or misconceptions have arisen due to all these social media posts.
So there have been many myths linked to the coronavirus pandemic. Some of these myths stem directly from Wuhan, China, while others stem from people desperate to search for a cure. According to the New York Times, misinformation has flourished. one article claimed to cite a health expert recommending that people contour the virus by rinsing their mouths with soap. Another claimed that setting on fireworks will sterilize joints of the ear. Both tactics have been confirmed to be false with this virus. Social media platforms have even taken it upon themselves to try and get all sorts of information out of their servers. According to Vox.com, the World Health Organization has used its own myth-busting resources. Its warning about misinformation has caused harmful discrimination. It is also said that Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok have been working to promote factual content, and some are deprioritizing misinformation on their platforms. This shows you the magnitude of the virus and how social media platforms are taking initiative to stop the panic and prevention. For the news, I'm Jaden Terra. Back to you, Marcus.
Thank you, Jaden. Online harassment is a big issue for media professionals, journalists, and popular target of harassment, especially women journalists, who are often the targets of trolling and social media harassment. What can the news industry do about this threat to reporters? This is a job safety issue. News organizations are trying to figure out how to handle the constant threat of verbal and even physical violence. Diana P. Natale is here looking into this problem. Diana, can you give us an example of the kind of harassment you're talking about?
Thanks, Lucas. Yeah, so there are many different examples of online harassment. Some examples are like some women journalists being called unintelligent just because they have blonde hair, which is a ridiculous statement to make because people should care about the work that she's doing and not her appearance. But unfortunately, that's not the world we live in. And on the other hand, men journalists will be criticized for their professional output and their work. With that being said, IPI, the International Press Institute, which is the global network for press freedom for journalists, launched a new protocol for newsrooms to tackle online harassment so it can reduce the professional and emotional toll that it could take on journalists.
What are some of the ways that IPI is going to tackle online harassment?
IPI's protocol is a four-step plan that newsrooms all across the world can use. Step one is to create a culture of safety within the newsroom around online abuse and establishing ways to report it. Step two is to assess the risk that the online abuse represents for the targeted journalist and the media outlet. Step three is implementing response and support measures. And step four is tracking cases of online harassment to see how effective the support and response measures have been. This is a great way to address online harassment because many people are afraid to speak up about it because they don't think that they will be supported and feel like they might lose their job.
Why is this protocol a good idea?
Hopefully, more journalists will speak up if they are getting harassed online, and hopefully there will be an end to it. Newsrooms should make their journalists feel comfortable and safe. The internet is a powerful tool, but many people abuse its power quite often. The people who are doing the online harassment don't realize that there's a real person on the other end of the screen being hurt by what they say. Just because people don't know them personally doesn't mean they don't have feelings like everyone else. So hopefully, this protocol will make people's self-esteem go up so that they know that they're protected. And for Global Media News, I'm Diana Pimentel. Back to you, Lucas.
Thank you, Diana. Let's talk about the latest in wearables. Do you like jewelry? There is a new high-tech bracelet called the Bracelet of Silence that promises to protect your privacy from all the hidden microphones in your life. Is this the solution to hidden audio surveillance, or just a gimmick?
Should you be worried about all of the devices in your life that may be recording your words? Smart speakers like Amazon's Alexa and Google Home all have microphones built into the way they treat a word and start recording. How do we know when they are recording, and what are they recording, and what happens to those recordings? We know what these platforms regularly sell data to third parties. Are our recorded interactions up for sale? Natalia Ventura has a report about a new invention that claims to keep us safe from all the devices that we need recording and then saving those audio recordings to some great database in the cloud. Natalia, a lot of people are anxious about having a smart speaker in their home that could be recording our conversations. Is this a real problem? Is Alexa or Google Home always recording us?
Thank you, Shanta. People who have a smart speaker made by companies such as Google, Apple, and Amazon should be cautious because the speakers can unintentionally be instructive on your private conversations. The devices in your home can activate after hearing words similar to their wake words, such as Siri. According to Northeastern University researchers David Chuckness and Daniel Dubois, they studied many types of smart speakers by playing about 120 hours of television for all of the devices. Their results were that the speakers were activating several times and recording the television. These devices are not constantly listening and recording, but they do wake up and they will record you at times when they shouldn't. Companies such as Amazon have had issues of the data collected being accidentally shared with a different Amazon customer. There was an incident actually in Germany when a man was reviewing his save data and discovered he could listen to about 1,700 audio recordings of an unknown individual's personal data. The smart speaker devices are technically always on, so and they are anticipating to hear their wake words, so resulting in possible unauthorized data collecting that the company can use commercially.
So what is the Bracelet of Silence?
The Bracelet of Silence was created by Ben Zhao and his wife Heather Zhang, and also an assistant professor, Pedro Lopez. They are computer science professors from the University of Chicago. Their goal is to successfully block devices such as the Echo from listening and recording the wearer's conversation. The bracelet is pretty large. It's a white cuff with 24 protruding speakers that can emit ultrasonic signals. These signals can be picked up by any nearby device that has a microphone, and it'll block that device's ability of recording by leaving behind white noise in the place of the conversation. The Bracelet of Silence can be a huge step in defending your privacy.
Is the bracelet currently available for purchase?
At the moment, the Bracelet of Silence is not available for use. It is, at the moment, just there are only prototypes being made. Reporting for Global Media News, I am Natalia Ventura. Back to you, Shanta.
Thank you, Natalia. My co-host, Lucas Bolton, is up next with a report about IGTV and Instagram's competition with TikTok for young audiences. What is the target audience for IGTV? Who produces the shows on IGTV? How is IGTV creating revenue for Instagram? Lucas, let's start at the beginning. What is IGTV and who owns it?
Thank you, Shanta. IGTV, it's a platform that was released 2 years ago in 2018. It's within the Instagram app itself, but there's also an app separate from where you can use it outside the Instagram app, where it's a logo with like a old box TV. And what IGTV does is it supplies users with content that has a longer duration than regular posts by users on Instagram. Also, on IGTV, the posts, they can be like, vertical, and there can be videos that last up to like 15, 20 minutes. So it was first designed for online video stars and celebrities, but users like the aspect of the platform for video sharing.
What changes are coming to IGTV?
IGTV will introduce the addition of advertisements and the funding of new shows to this platform. And with these changes, it gives a way for the company and influencers to make more revenue by adding advertisements within their own content. As Instagram also asked producers and content creators to create more content, also paying them as well. Instagram is going to follow a similar algorithm, such as YouTube. Like you has ads within their videos. So what Instagram plans on doing is they plan on introducing like a skip button at the beginning of a video, depending on the duration of the ad, but also the video itself, and then also advertisements in between each video as well.
How will these changes affect influencers on Instagram?
So it gives a chance for influencers to monetize their content by putting in ads they believe should be in their own content. And by doing this, it will give them a chance to make more money, more revenue as well. According to Hugh Ferry, who is a beauty and lifestyle influencer, she believes that it would give her more time to dedicate more to video production, making more content for Instagram. And I believe this change will definitely benefit users and influencers on Instagram.
How will these changes compete with other platforms such as TikTok and YouTube?
I mean, it's Instagram's version of their own video hub, and they have to do what they can to gain more users, and take the users that are using these other platforms over on IGTV. I think that YouTube will never be defeated, at least for a long, long time, because they were the video platform that really started it all. I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. And also, they're also owned by Google. So, but for TikTok, this is different because this is a platform that's similar to Vine, where Vine was an app where you make a 7-second video, and this app doesn't exist anymore. But for the users of TikTok, it seems like it's popular, but they're different in the sense that IGTV is used for more. For videos that are longer, but TikTok is used for shorter videos. In my opinion, I think since TikTok is following the same path as Vine, it might fall down the same way Vine did, where users would record making short videos, short skits. That being said, I think IGTV would definitely compete with these platforms.
What new shows or content is being introduced in addition to this show?
So Instagram will introduce its first show on the year of First, which will be launched by Michelle Obama with media company ATTN, as it follows the life of four freshman college students from Washington, D.C., North Dakota, California, and Alabama. And it shows their first year experience in college. According to Michelle Obama, she says that by sharing these stories, they're helping others see that the ups and downs of their first year of college are something everyone goes through, and they're creating a supportive community for others facing similar challenges. The show itself is slated to be released later this month on Instagram. They haven't announced other shows in the work at this time. For Global Media News, I'm Lucas Walton, back to you, Chantal.
Thank you. Notifications driving you nuts, so you just shut them all off right now. But what if you miss something important? How can you take control of the notifications?
Notifications help us keep up with important news. News of the world, news about work, and news about our friends and family. Is this too much of a good thing? Can too many notifications be a problem? It's overwhelming. My co-host, Chantal Smith, is here to help us take control of our notifications. Chantal, can we just turn all of our notifications off if it's making us anxious?
How often are you bombarded with notifications? For many of us, it never stops. From the moment you wake up until you fall asleep at night, emails, ad notifications, and dozens of text messages are just appearances of what gives you notifications. Many of us receive at least one alert from each of the apps that we use to our phones. Hearing the constant ding can be one of the anticipation or agony. According to Jamie Bitterstorm of the New York Times, notifications on your phone and computers are great for keeping up to date with breaking news, weather, and expected updates. But those real-time alerts popping up can also drive you nuts with frequent interruptions from your phone. Not to mention the battery burn reduces for all that activity.
Why do we need to take control of our notifications?
Well, when managing notifications, they have to completely step away from their devices to completely free from alerts. The solution can be from more simple than one may assume. When downloading an app, you're often asked full of alerts, but the app is enough to make the alerts. Most apps allow you to turn off notifications or specify when you want to be alerted about it. Consider how much you want to be able to and make your decision. Opting out here does not mean you can never make the notifications. If there are alerts that you can't seem to get rid of, contact me. You're more than likely not the only one with the same issue.
What are some examples of notification overload?
Facebook has been a leading social media app for years, but has been known to see an excessive amount of alerts every day. Between birthday reminders, event invites, and the most annoying people you may know about, Facebook has saturated our notification settings. I can tell that even though I'm just loading, I get at least 30 notifications for my Facebook. On a busy day, that number can exceed 50. That's 2 or 3 notifications per waking hour, and I'm not a heavy Facebook user. Many people don't realize how much you can alter the settings on many social media apps. If things aren't of interest in that way, Facebook allows you to hide and unfollow most of those things. The problem with unfollowing and altering your settings, the app updates often, bringing new notifications to uncover process all over again.
Are apps the only notification we can manage?
No. Apps aren't the only notifications we seem to lose control of. Work-related emails and phone calls can also be overwhelming. You may leave your job at 5, but your work seems to follow you home. If possible, you can manage work emails and calls to only notify you at specific times and even allow certain things to be classified as urgent to pass by your filters. Companies like Apple, as well as Google's Do Not Disturb settings, are giving times and dates of the week to be notified. Managing your notifications gives you control over the media and alert fatigue. It allows you to consume things that are of interest to you and filter things that aren't. For Global Media News, I am Chantal Smith. Back to you, Lucas.
Thanks, Chantal. Intellectual property, or IP, is a big legal conflict today. Pitting IP rights owners against creators who want to use and share content that may not always belong to them, it is just so easy to copy content and use it for your own purposes. YouTube is the biggest streaming video platform of user-generated content. But a lot of users are cutting up and copying protected audio and video material. The problem is that many YouTubers are uploading content that does not belong to them. How can YouTube mediate between the YouTube content creators and all the angry rights holders who are alleging copyright infringement? YouTube does have content policies which state what can or can't be uploaded to the platform. But how can YouTube know if a video or audio track has been pirated? Alex Prudencio is on the YouTube beat in our new media newsroom. Alex, what is YouTube Content ID? Can you give us a basic explanation of what it is and how it works?
It's YouTube's Content ID system, or content copyright claim system, works as if a person feels like their content is being stolen or being misused, they can copyright claim it, and works, and it takes down the video or takes every monetization that it has.
Who is using these systems?
Big TV and movie studios, music companies, and content creators themselves.
How did it become such an issue?
It became such an issue because if you use only a 5-second clip of a IP, they claim it the entire video as their own.
How content creators issues with fighting these issues?
Content creators are dealing with the issue by actually bringing awareness to these false claims as before the person that was making the claim would take all the monetization for themselves. Now it goes to a separate account, and whoever wins the claim gets the money. For Global Media News, this is Alex Prudencio. Back to you, Lucas.
Thanks, Alex. Let's talk about privacy. keeping our data, especially our financial data, private is very important. In 2017, there was a major data hack of one of the biggest credit reporting companies, Equifax. Shannon Vogel has an update for us.
Many people are wondering why the break-in was able to happen to Equifax. They were given a tool called Apache Patch beforehand to stop the hacking epidemic from happening. So if they knew they were given this tool, why wasn't it used? Who should have overseen the installment? We, the people, need to worry if our private information isn't being held to as secure as one would like. The Credit Bureau contains a lot of our information. Equifax has over 800 million consumers, and that's not including 88 million businesses. According to CNET.com, Equifax offered the clients who were affected free credit monitoring or up to $125, depending on how many people asked for money.
What information do credit bureaus have?
Credit bureaus hold your social security numbers, your birthdays, your addresses, and even your credit card information and numbers.
Who hacked Equifax back in 2017?
The China People's Liberation Army is the one who hacked the system, stealing over 145 million American accounts, not including what accounts they stole from Canada and the UK. Four members of the army have conspired to hack Equifax to steal nearly 500,000 American citizens' personal information. Now the question is, should it have happened knowing that the Apache Patch was given months prior to avoid a security breach? For Global Media News, I'm Shannon Rillo. Back to Chantel.
That's all for this week. Thanks to my co-host, Liz Warren, great producer and engineer, Brendan Long.
Thanks, Chantel. Today, we have heard reports from Jamie Natale, Diana Pimentel, Alex Prudencio, Shannon Vulo, Chantel Smith, Natalia Ventura, and Lucas Walden.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWR, All Westbury Radio, Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at globalmedianews.org, where you can listen to all of the webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
And follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed.